So let me get this straight. The team has the greatest season in its franchise history. It's a 100-and-whatever-point team. They've built, without question, one of the best young franchises in the NHL. They've got the cornerstone defenseman. They got two great forwards, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
And this is when we reshuffle the front office, Florida?
Yeah. And once again, it will be a successful franchise, and someone else will be taking the bows for Dale Tallon's work. Stop me if you've heard this before. Stop me if you've seen this movie before. Dale Tallon does all the heavy lifting, gets pushed aside as someone else takes bows for all of his work. Ladies and gentlemen, your Florida Panthers.
The only thing I can figure out about this is two things. The first is obviously that Dale is old school, like Will Ferrell going streaking old school, right? No, he's not old school.
I mean, he is from the old school, but I mean, if anyone tries to position this as, you know, Dale Tallon is, you know, anti-analytics, and that's why he's pushed aside for these new school guys, these rock and roll dudes that are coming in and are going to corsi up this son of a... No, I don't buy it for 1 second.
Why don't you buy that?
Because I know that's not who Dale Tallon is. Now, Dale Tallon is someone that will, you know, measure eyeballs with analytics. I mean, he's not one of these... I mean, we saw Pierre Maguire's comments the other day about how analytics didn't work in Toronto, which makes me want to stab my eyeballs with a fork. He's not like that at all. He just doesn't give sort of primacy to one or the other. He treats the whole thing like it's part of one, you know, one big discussion about players and how to evaluate them and how to construct teams.
So then that brings me to the other.
But this thing is coming a mile away. Like this thing was coming the first indication for everybody should have been when the Dale Tallon press release came out about his contract extension. And let's not forget they extended this guy this year.
Right.
What the terms of that deal is, I don't know. Was it a lowball offer they didn't think that he would take? I don't know. But on this exact same press release, as Dale Tallon was being celebrated by the Florida Panthers PR department for signing a contract extension with the franchise, dovetailing that announcement was the introduction of Tom Rowe as the associate general manager. Can you tell me once, Greg, where you've seen that before?
I have not. Oh, I thought you had an example cooked up.
No, I don't. I don't. I've never seen. I'm asking, like, because I don't know. I've never seen that. Hey, we just signed our general manager of the year. Oh, and by the way, maybe even the bigger news for 6 months down the road when we put in who we really want to have in here, but we can't. We don't have cover for it right now. Tom Rowe will be the not assistant, but associate general manager.
Boy, an associate's always such a. That's such a terrible word to hear if you're the incumbent. Like when they name somebody the associate coach, and like you're some freshie from junior, and the guy next to you is like Jacques Martin, right?
I remember it's funny because I talked to one coach about it. I talked to one assistant coach who was really an associate coach. And I said, oh, okay, that's great. Congratulations. You're assistant coach of the franchise. And quickly, no. I'm the associate coach.
Right.
I'm not the assistant coach. Thank you very much.
All right.
It does carry much more cachet.
So if it's not the analytics thing, the one thing that comes to mind immediately is that Dale was not the hire of the Vinny Viola ownership group.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, he wasn't their guy.
Right.
It's pretty simple. I mean, listen, you spend that kind of money for a franchise. I understand it. Like, you have the right to bring in your own people. You have the right to hire whomever you want. But if I'm a Florida Panthers fan, I'm thinking to myself, well, hang on a second here. What's going on? Like, that's the thing. You have the right to do that. And Florida Panthers fans and ticket holders have the right to say, hold on a second here. So we're replacing Dale Tallon with a bunch of people that have never done this before.
You're replacing Dale. Let's put a fine point on it. You're replacing Dale Tallon with Tom Rowe, who previously was a coach. He's been an executive for about 15 minutes in the NHL.
And he was an assistant general manager with Hartford, I want to say, in like 91 or 92. Right? But you're right. He was recently seen as a head coach of Portland.
So he has a Pierre Maguire level of experience, what you're trying to say.
Was he with Pierre? Was that when Pierre was with Hartford?
He might have been.
Okay.
All right. But anyway, hang on.
So him and Eric Joyce.
Joyce was the general manager of the Portland Pirates since 2014 and the assistant general manager.
And before that, he served and went to West Point and played college hockey.
Well, thank you for your...
By the way, expect to hear West Point plenty with the Florida Panthers, if you already noticed.
They're changing their logo to look like the Army logo, aren't they?
And I think next the Zamboni just going to be a tank that drags a wet mop behind it.
Hey,
is that what has to salute?
Don't be throwing around the word tank in the Panthers anymore, okay? Those days are done. They got a nice little team now.
Okay.
And then also, of course, Steve Wurrier. I'm probably screwing up that last name.
Steve Wurrier. I think it's Wurrier.
Who was the Panthers VP of Legal and Business Affairs and is now the Assistant General Manager. But most importantly, and this is where I think a lot of the analytics talk comes from, is the guy who heads up their analytics department. Now, I was talking to somebody in the analytics community. And the thought is that he is sort of the executive face of the analytics department, the guy that would go to ownership and say, here's what's up. He's not the numbers guy. He's never really been that part of the community. They got a bunch of big brains there that are. But he's the guy that's sort of overseeing that part of it. And apparently has the noodle to do it. I was told he's not the guy that's in the weeds, but he's a smart enough guy to be able to facilitate the department, is the way it was termed to me.
So, Arianna Huffington. So
yes,
he's the aggregator, puts it all together, and presents it to ownership.
We're going to go and we're going to find the best Corsi and the best Fendwick, and we're going to make sure that all of the people know that we have the best Corsi and Fendwick.
By the way, the Arianna Huffington impression, just Bobby Hole League 5 octaves higher.
I was going to say, what the hell is that? What kind of impression is that? Yeah, because it's
Bobby Hole League impression, but it's got a few V's in there randomly as well.
Oh, okay. Because is it Brian McDonald, I think, does, and it heads up the analytics. Like, he's like put on the boots and unpack thing and do all everything and do all the data scraping.
Right.
I think
the one thing I'll say, I know what you said off the top of the show, but the one thing I'll say though is that, like, both George Richards and Harvey Filikoff, the two beat writers for the Panthers, both pointed to this shift to analytics as the reason Dale's getting kicked upstairs. So at least it's either their observation and they're not exactly right on it, or that's the line being sold to them from people saying, here's why this happened.
There's a lot of lines about analytics being sold the last however many months in Florida.
Yeah.
Don't you get that feeling? Like, it almost seemed as, I said this on the program last week, it'll be very interesting to see which writers get hired. Which analytics writers get hired by the Florida Panthers. And some who did a lot of water carrying on behalf of the team, and some who didn't. Right? Like, some who went out there and, like, hey, man, Florida whispered to me they want me to pump up Brandon Peary at trade deadline. Man, maybe if I do this, I'll get a job there. Hey, man, Dale Tallon made all these moves. Let's dump on them analytically. Maybe I'll get a job there. It's pretty obvious.
Like, keep your eyes
too.
For who people have disappeared. Yeah. Who's disappearing.
And again, listen, I want to reemphasize this. You know, that ownership group has the right to do with their franchise what they see fit. And if they feel that it's sound to move someone like Dale Tallon out and bring in Tom Rowe and Eric Joyce and Steve Wurrier and use those guys as the group that's going to run the entire hockey operations department, then that is their right. But as one agent told me yesterday, whenever agents see new/inexperienced management groups like this, they lick their chops.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that, you know, unless there is someone in there who has, you know, a longtime steadying hand on the wheel of the franchise, you know, new management groups tend to not want to be embarrassed and want to look like they can get things done. So generally, and I don't know if this happens to Florida, but I'm just saying, from what one agent told me yesterday, they can be rushed into making decisions that an otherwise more veteran general manager wouldn't, because they want to show that they can be effective.
Last thing I want to say before we get to Mike Russo, I will say that in the favor of the Viola group, I don't believe anybody that is currently now in a managerial position, other than Dale Tallon, who's been kicked upstairs, has any direct ties to the Chicago Blackhawks. So no $5.5 million for Dave Bolins, no retaining $2.2 million in salary for Christopher Stieg. Now it's no longer the depository for bad Blackhawks contracts.
Whoa. Once upon a time, we said that Brian Campbell was a bad contract. All of a sudden, he's become their most important defenseman. In defense.
Oh, it was still a terrible contract. It's just that they had the cap room to suffer the hit. Let's be honest.
He made everybody right. better on that team. Anyway, let's pick up more Florida Panthers talk in a bit, because our buddy is standing by.
Joining us now on the line, the luckiest man in all of hockey, because he gets to get Bruce Boudreau quotes for the next 4 years. It's
awesome.
Mike Russo.
Funny,
hey, Russo, how are you?
Yeah, very good. I was just talking to somebody that actually just said, you got the best beat in hockey now.
Totally.
Yep.
Yeah, hey, no, hey, Russo, before we...
I've said selfishly all along that I was hoping for Boudreau just for that reason. We all know what type of guy he is to cover, and I think it'll be fun.
Well, it's better than, you know, having a G.I. Joe figure with a pull string that was Mike Yeo, I'll tell you that. But, hey, do you have any thoughts on Tallon getting kicked upstairs in Florida, by the way?
Yeah, I've heard this was actually coming for a while, and I hear that, I mean, this is turning into, like, Team West Point down there. They've changed up everything. Last week, the equipment managers were gassed. The guy that has been running Incredible Ice, which is their practice facility from before it was even their practice facility, was fired last week. He's been there like 20-something years, started the place. And I can tell you that the players down there are really upset about that. I mean, you know the way that equipment guys are part of the fabric of a team, and it just seems like right now they're changing the hierarchy. And, you know, hopefully this doesn't – because they got something big building there, and I think they've done a great job scouting and gobbling up players. And my concern always with that franchise is they change ownership so many times and change management so many times that they just always seem to start over. And, you know how long I covered them. When I covered them, they were one of the most dysfunctional teams I've ever been around. And it just seems like the last 15 years, it's continue to be that way because of the amount of things that have changed. And here they do it again. They finally have things going the right direction. And, you know, whether they want to say Tallon is the president of hockey ops or what, I mean, there's no doubt he's being kind of pushed upstairs and is going to have much less of a role on this team.
Yeah, and, you know, you as you mentioned, you covered the Florida Panthers. I think that was your first beat, wasn't it, Mike, covering the Florida Panthers?
Yeah, it was. Yep.
So, I mean, you've covered this countless times, and I'm sure that you've seen so many different times. As long as you keep moving the goalposts, you can't lose the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And how many times have you seen that from the Cats?
No, I agree. And, look, they'll never be probably the way that they were years ago. I mean, the year after I left, the year before I left the organization, covering them for the Sun Sentinel, I mean, remember they fired Rick Dudley, fired Mike Keenan. Eventually then stepped down at a month before the trade deadline to concentrate again on his GM duties, brought in John Torchetti as the interim coach. And then all of a sudden he offers John Torchetti the job, offered almost no salary. And 2 days later, after John Torchetti turned it down, Rick Dudley was out on his butt and Mike Keenan came back as the GM. And so, you know, behind the scenes, he was talking to the owner. I mean, that's the type of power struggle that was going on there between Keenan and Dudley. And it's just always kind of been that way. And they've had so much ownership turmoil. And that's why, to me, it is so important in an organization to have stability, especially up top with your ownership. And really, from the moment Wayne Huizenga sold that team to Alan Cohen, it's been this way for, 16 years. I mean, again, they have not won a playoff round since 96, haven't, made the playoffs, twice since 2000. And it's just a... It's a shame, and they've got to get it together down there because they actually, if you look at the on-ice, I have always said about the Florida Panthers that the on-ice product was, has always been, better than the off-ice product. And if the off-ice product had ever equaled what they got on the ice, this team would be formidable. And they've got to make sure that this, whatever just happened there, and again, I'm not in the in and out every day, but whatever just happened there, they've got to make sure that this does not disable what they've really begun there, because I look at this team as having the ability to be a constant contender in the East right now. And they've just got to make sure that this doesn't take, you know, force them to take a step back. And that's why even just something as minor as it might sound from the outside is firing all your equipment staff could be something that really hurts a team, because I'm telling you, these players love those guys. And everything that I hear the last couple, last week, since, you know, I talked to George Richards last week, and it's very clear that the players were upset about this.
God, it's amazing to think that it was a time in NHL expansion history when it was Wayne Huizenga and Disney buying teams, and that was when NHL was struggling.
One was going to make the movies, the other was going to distribute the movies in his stores. That's crazy.
Yeah,
hey, Russo.
That's a great point.
Russo, on the Wild front with this Boudreaux thing. So Boudreaux signs with the Wild. It's announced yesterday. Again, by the way, amazing timing always in the NHL when the biggest coaching hiring and the MVP trophy are both announced on a Saturday. But Boudreaux signs a 4-year deal, apparently one more year longer than the Senators were willing to go. How much of this pursuit do you think for Chuck Fletcher and for Craig Leopold was let's land the biggest name coach that we can in the offseason?
Yeah, I do think that was the edict. You know, Chuck Fletcher only talked to Randy Carlyle, John Torchetti, and Bruce Boudreaux from what I could gather. And by the way, I was told that just actually about 10 minutes ago that 5 minutes after Randy Carlyle was told by Chuck Fletcher that he wasn't in on Minnesota, that he got a call from Ottawa saying the same thing. So I think Ottawa's I think Ottawa's close on who they're going to hire right now. I also hear that guys like Guy Boucher and Bob Hartley are big time into that, as well as Mike Yeo. So we'll see there. But, you know, I think this was the edict to Chuck Fletcher that, look, we've given you the, not that Mike Yeo did a bad job here at all. He was here 5 years, but, you know, you hired two first-year coaches, and we've had plenty of opportunity over the years to go and land a, you know, Peter Laviolette or a Ken Hitchcock or something like that. And right now you got to go get the guy with the most experience. And before Bruce Boudreaux was fired, really Randy Carlyle was the only one that fit that bill. And I think that scared the bejesus out of some people in the organization, especially Chuck Fletcher, who, you know, doesn't have a lot of wiggle room here. He can't, I think, afford to hire a coach. As much as I think this coach needs a badass to come in here and lay down the law, I really genuinely believe that if you get a coach that usually wears out his welcome like a Hartley or a Randy Carlyle would a couple years in, you're really potentially putting yourself in a difficult position. So, you know, the goal here is to go get somebody that I know he's had underachievements in the playoffs, but his regular season success has obviously been unbelievable. If he could replicate his regular season success, that would be quite an achievement in this division. And then if they get in the playoffs, then you deal with that then. And so that to me made the most sense. Obviously, this team doesn't have Alex Ovechkin and Nick Backstrom. They don't have Ryan Getzlaf and Corey Perry. But there are a lot of pieces here that I think that if Bruce Boudreaux can get this team going in the offensive-minded way that he likes this team, likes his style of game to be played, I think that this team has that ability to play that way.
Well, Mike, here's the interesting thing for me for Bruce Boudreaux in Minnesota. And maybe this is much like Mike Babcock in Toronto, where he is the face of the franchise because there's no other person to wear it right now. Boudreaux goes into Minnesota and, you know, with all due respect to Zach Parise and with all due respect to Ryan Suter, does he not now become the face of the franchise? And how good is your team when the coach is the face of the franchise?
Well, that's a good point. He's a fun guy to cover, and you're right. He is gonna be the story for a while because anytime there's something new, you're gonna write about it nonstop. I don't know. Maybe Parise and Suter, after the way that this year went, kind of need that need
sure.
to be in the back burner a little bit. But I do think that this is a strange locker room. I mean, there's a lot of egos in there. I think John Torchetti was doomed the moment that he kind of called out, even without saying his name, Ryan Suter in the playoffs. I've heard that Ryan went absolutely ballistic behind the scenes with Torchetti after the fact, and I think he was doomed from that point on, and that was between games 4 and 5. And that is the type of thing that I think everybody in this organization is going to have to lasso. It is imperative that Chuck Fletcher, that Bruce Boudreaux get the leadership group of this team aside and start becoming a team again, because this team, if it doesn't start, I know it sounds cliche, but if they don't start playing like a team, they will always be a team just eking into the playoffs and maybe making a wild card and then picking 15th in the draft every single year. And, you know, they border on mediocrity. And they need Boudreaux to come in here and get these guys, especially when you look at Parisian Suter and Koivu and the age of the core of this team, only getting older. There's a window here. Even though they got, and I know every time I write about the window or talk about the window, Chuck Fletcher comes back. We have 10 guys that are 26 and under. Yeah, all right. But the core of your team, the guys that make 20% of your cap, are only getting older. And they're all coming off tough years. Actually, that's not fair. I thought Koivu and Suter were pretty decent this year. But, you know, this is the type of thing that, to me, has to get taken care of first. And so, you know, whether whoever is the face of the franchise, that to me doesn't matter. They've got to get this group together as a team to start really pushing these young guys in the right direction. If that makes any sense.
It totally does. Hey, now, how quickly, once it became obvious that Bruce Boudreaux is going to be the head coach, did you start brushing up on your WHA Minnesota Fighting Saints trivia?
Well, I loved all the pictures that came out yesterday. For a guy that played 30 games in the franchise, it's an amazing amount of pictures there are of him in uniform. And I've read so much about Bruce Boudreaux the last week. I mean, it was just so obvious that he was going to be the guy. If he, you know, I think the Wild got really concerned, obviously, when all of a sudden he's posing for pictures with the Ottawa Sun with his daughter the other day in Ottawa. And that's why, I mean, it is, you know, it's amazing that Chuck Fletcher, before he got back to the hotel that night in Ottawa, this guy had a major contract offer waiting for him from Minnesota. So, you know, I've read a ton about him. He's obviously a charismatic guy. Fans here are going to love him. I mean, obviously, we've all seen the 24/7 clips and things like that. But, I mean, you guys know just from interviewing him over the years. I mean, he's honest. He's funny. He's down to earth. He's just a, you know, a good guy to deal with. And, you know, was in Flapshot. Who doesn't love that?
Well, I know. And so was his apartment, right? Famously used in the as Reg Dunlop's apartment. Let me, really quick, because I want to get to Ottawa here quickly. Do you think that Ottawa was used as a stalking horse by Bruce Boudreaux? Because it seemed, you know, the moment that the reports came out about wanting to be closer to family there and he was warming up to Ottawa, like the minute that happened, all of a sudden it seemed as if, Fletcher said, I better write the big ticket here because I can outprice the machine.
Hey, there's no doubt that helped. I mean, there's no doubt the Wild went into panic mode. I mean, you know, Craig Leopold is paying a coach $2 million more a year than he's ever paid a coach in his life.
Right.
So this is obviously was the guy they wanted, and I don't think they wanted to go to Plan B, which was Carlisle. I think Torchetti was never really getting the job, and frankly, at this point, I know how disappointed Torchetti is. It'd be shocking to me if he even takes the last year of his deal in Iowa and goes back there. So I do think that definitely helped. It also helped that Chuck Fletcher got in front of this. I mean, there is no doubt that the second that Bruce Boudreaux was fired, that he was the guy. I think that what I hear is that Bob Murray had an email waiting for him by the time that press conference was even over. And you know, that day they spoke, Bruce Boudreaux and Chuck Fletcher. They spoke again all day last Saturday, and Chuck Fletcher was on a plane there Monday night. So, you know, I think that says a lot. I think that said a lot to Bruce Boudreaux. It does still surprise me, unless the money was completely out of whack, that he chose here just based on, you know, I look at that Ottawa situation, other than the goaltending, is a pretty appetizing situation. They got a, you know, a heck of a lot of talent up front. They got Eric Carlson on the back end. And so this, you know, I thought that the second that he was posing with his daughter and granddaughter that the Wild was screwed. And I started reading up on Randy Carlisle, I can tell you that.
I'll pause on that for a second, because I agree with you. And actually, the team we haven't really talked about here is Calgary, because the timing of that firing, everybody thought that was for Bruce. Everybody's like, oh, that makes total sense. This is a team that's got some young pieces. They just need a guy to kind of tie it all together, maybe improve their possession numbers from dog shit to good, you know, do the little things. And so that seemed like a pretty appealing situation. Ottawa, I agree with you. I mean, especially with the whole Mike Green, Eric Carlson kind of thing, you thought that would be an appealing situation. This team, this Minnesota team, looks like they might have like a 3-year window, and then that's it. I mean, like, I'm with you. I was a little stunned that it ended up being Minnesota.
Yeah, I really don't. I would love to know. I'm hoping to talk, you know, that we get to talk to Bruce here before the presser. You know, I did correspond with him last night after he landed. He was on the plane all day yesterday, and I heard from him late last night and hope to talk to him. But I'd love to know what the deciding factor was. If there were any promises, like, hey, just to let you know, Vanek will not be here. You know, I think the Wild, as they usually do, probably sold a lot of their kids coming. I just don't know how good these, you know, they did have an influx of talent that are coming to Iowa next year. I still don't know how high end any of those guys are. But it really does surprise me. I do think that the fact the Wild have made the playoffs 4 years in a row is something that, talking to a couple of friends of Bruce Boudreau this morning for a profile I'm working on, I think that did lure him. I think that he thinks that the team can be better, and that, you know, he thinks that maybe it's a closer window of getting into the playoffs and then doing something there rather than, you know, trying to build a team.
So how different then do the Wild look next season, Mike?
You know, it's hard to say because they're really locked. I mean, unless you're getting guys to waive no trade clauses and to make some significant trades with some of that would probably cost you some of your top and young talent. You know, their team is pretty, they have four draft picks in this year's draft. So there's not a lot of draft picks that you could parlay anymore in this year's draft to try to turn into players. They'll obviously trade Dorsey Kemper, but I don't know how much you get there. You know, I think that they'll look to move him. And then the question is, do you move some of your young D, Dumba, Brodin, you know, Scandella, somebody like that? Nino and Granlund have one more year left on each of their deals to be restricted free agents. So eventually you have to start to think, how can you make a long-term commitment to them? And if not, you might have to move them. I've got to think they're going to buy out Vanek, open up some cap space and maybe go after an Oposo or something like that. Although I personally, just my gut says that Oposo might be earmarked for team like Arizona with his, you know, the fact that Kyle fired his agent and hired Pat Brisson and the relationship that their new GM has with Brisson. And obviously he's going to be looking for a gigantic contract this year that might be too much for the Wild to pay. But I think they've got to open up some cap space, but there's just not a lot of flexibility to really redo this roster going into next season, in my opinion.
That's interesting.
Well, you got anything else for Russo there? We've monopolized his time on a day in which I'm sure he has to write all the stories.
I know, you got a lot. So what are you doing today, Mike? How's things? What'd you have for breakfast? Did you get to the gym yet today? What's going on, Michael?
Yeah, actually, I'm back on my end of the year health kick. So I had a protein shake today, and I am going to the gym. But yeah, no, today is about, unfortunately, you know, with the press conference Tuesday, you can't just like go dark the next 2 days. So I'm hoping to have a newsy story in tomorrow's paper and profile on Boudreau and in Tuesday's paper, then the presser, and then I'm going to get the heck out of here. I'm going jet-setting a little bit. I'm going to a couple concerts in North Carolina. I got a bunch of trips. I'm covering the Stanley Cup Finals this year. That'll be fun.
Attaboy. Hey, who are you going to see in North Carolina?
Going to see Trampled by Turtles. They're a band here out of Minnesota, and they got a couple shows in North Carolina. I'm friends with the lead singer, and they're actually they also sold out Red Rocks for, I think, a fourth year in a row in August. I'm going to go see them there, too.
Wow. Nice. Yep. That sounds cool, man. Well, you've earned it, bud. Enjoy it.
Yep.
Enjoy it, my friend. All right. Thanks, Michael.
Yep. See ya. Bye-bye.
The great Mike Russo. Giving us all we need to know about the Minnesota Wild. Were you surprised
me on that? Were you surprised by that? The whole, like, Boudreau picking the Wild thing? Because I thought, Ottawa's got issues, and I honestly wouldn't want to work for that owner. But Calgary, I thought, is maybe in a better place as far as, like, the age of their best players than the Minnesota Wild are.
How interested was Calgary in Bruce Boudreau?
Not a lot. They didn't even, I guess they didn't formally interview him. They didn't bring him in.
Yeah, and I I don't want to just sort of make this an audit on Eugene Melnyk's, you know, checkbook, but isn't this kind of yet another audit on Eugene Melnyk's checkbook? He talked about going about getting the best available and they're going to come here to Ottawa and, you know, we're spending the money and, well, there's no cap on coaches. You just got outbid by Minnesota.
Yeah, and the outbid was apparently a fourth year.
So what?
According to Bruce Garriott.
Well,
it's so what, because let's be honest here. Like, the Minnesota Wild have had how many coaches in their history? The Ottawa Senators have had how many coaches since 2006?
Well, it's revolving. It's a complete revolving door in Ottawa.
Why would you give somebody a fourth year when he's probably gone
4 years? Hold on, dude. We have three coaches in 4 years. You're not understanding this, Bruce. This is not how we do things.
Yeah. It's like the Steinbrenner Yankees before Joe Torre giving anybody a four-year contract.
But, and you know what? Interesting take by Russo as well on the Florida Panthers. And it was in within like the first couple of breaths that he mentioned West Point.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, gassing everybody and, you know, filling up the organization with people that went to West Point.
Yeah. That should be interesting.
It's going to be really interesting in Florida now. Because you have... you can start negotiating with Ekblad on July 1, right? Because he'll have one. Yeah, July 1 you can start. And so what's that price tag going to be?
Well, you got him. You got Huberto coming up.
God, he's
you got
a good
Barkov signed. But you got those two. Yeah, you got some people. Got some concerns.
And what do you do? Again, I'll come back. I'll come back to the defenseman. What do you do with Brian Campbell?
Well, wouldn't you? I mean, come on! Don't you think Campbell's going to Chicago on a cap friendly deal?
They have room. I don't know. Why would it be cap friendly? They can make it player friendly in Florida, can't they?
That's up to Campbell. Like I think that Campbell to Chicago makes perfect sense for both players, for both the player and the team. That reunion.
They do need a defenseman there, yes.
And they need a puck moving defenseman.
Yes, they do.
Yep. So you don't have, you know, Trevor Van Riems, like, fumbling the puck around in a key spot in a playoff game.
Who else do they have coming up? Yeah, I guess Huberto's a big one in 2017. Riley Smith, he had a hell of a playoffs.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing. Here's the other thing, too. And we saw this in Chicago with the outpouring as well of players. Those players love Dale Tallon.
They do.
They, like, wherever he goes, players love this guy. They love this general manager. That's
tricky. They did this after Yager signed. They announced this after Yager signed.
On a pretty big ticket, too.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Considering
how do you see the Ottawa coaching thing working out? It looks like Mike Yeo is the front runner there.
He is, eh? That's how you're reading it? I read your post today, and would it surprise you if two of those names showed up there? Because the name Benoit Grew always grabs me. I think that he's probably done coaching in junior hockey with Gatineau, and he's right across the border there, you know, to Ottawa. Would it surprise you to see him show up either way as an assistant coach?
You think he shows up as an assistant or runs the AHL team?
No. Ooh, that's another great one, too, because Luke Richardson's gone.
Right, yeah. That's
a great point. But I do see Benoit Grew ending up in the Ottawa Senators. Actually, I think I mentioned this last summer on the podcast. I don't be surprised if Benoit Grew ends up in the NHL and probably with the Ottawa Senators. I don't think even anyone in Gatineau thought he'd come back to junior hockey.
Yeah.
But I think
so we got, so we're thinking, yo, I think Boucher's such an interesting, you know, I was looking back at Boucher, like you saw in the post that I wrote on Puck Daddy today. I was looking back at Boucher's numbers in Tampa. That first season when they made that playoff run, they were a great team. Just a great possession team, played that system really well, but boy, it turned sour. And I can't tell if it's because of the system they were playing or because they just hated him. They just hated him. Like that, he became insufferable after that first season, like ego out of control, you know, Boucher bigger than the team, that whole thing. And I think the theory is that his sabbatical in Switzerland has made him humble. That's the thought.
I know we've heard that about other coaches before too. Mark Crawford, like whenever a guy is gone for a long time, why is it the same thing? Oh, you know, I had a sober reflection for a couple of years and thought about how I did things, and I'm going to do things differently now.
Right.
And then they get a job and they go back to being who they are.
Right.
Here's the thing. When you're thinking about the Ottawa Senators, do you not have to think? When you're Pierre Dorion and you're making this coaching decision, and it'll be made in concert with Eugene Melnick, of course, do you not have to think, not in the back of your mind, but in the front of your mind, will Erik Karlsson like this? Because right now you've got Erik Karlsson squandering his prime years as one of the best defensemen of this generation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at what point does Karlsson say, I've had enough? I've had enough of this. I'm 26 years old. I'm in the prime of my career. have gone through how many different coaches, went through how many different rebuilds. Enough of this. Doesn't that person you have to bring in have to kind of say, you know what, we're doing a solid for the organization, and Erik Karlsson has to love this move.
Well, if that's the case, then maybe you pause on Boucher, don't you?
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. That's why I think
like,
Boudreau
that's why Boudreau would have been
pick. Oh God,
so,
it would have
so
perfect.
Great for Karlsson.
Oh
he
my God, but Karlsson would have had a 50 goal season. You kidding me?
Yeah.
You're doing great. But they have Ottawa's a very, like I asked that question about Russo, because I really do think that, you know, knowing how Craig Leopold works, and, you know, the Parise-Suter thing being the greatest example, loves the big swing at the fences, loves
sure.
to land the big name. And Boudreau's the biggest name. He's the biggest frame, biggest name. And you got them both. And then you look at Ottawa and you say to yourself, okay, this is a different sell job. This is a job where you have to sell your fans on the idea that this is the perfect guy for this organization and that he's going to lead them forward. And that's why, like, thank God they didn't hire Randy Carlyle. Could you imagine trying to sell Randy Carlyle to the other Ontario fan base? Are you kidding me?
That's a tough one.
Like, you'd have season ticket cancellations.
But do you not think, though, that they can't do the rookie head coach?
No, they can't.
They can't do that. Which is why, you know, the one attractive name for me out of all of this, and maybe he ends up in Calgary, but the one attractive name through all of this, and considering he's, you know, been on the bench, you know, beside, you know, one of the masters of the game right now, and has a Stanley, Kevin Dineen.
Dineen, yeah.
He's got the head coaching experience, international experience, like, I don't know, man. Don't sleep on Dineen.
The one I can't figure out is Crawford. Like, his name is out there again. He's up for these jobs again, and now he's up for a job in Calgary where Brian Burke's at the top of the food chain. What's that relationship like?
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, what is that relationship now in 2016?
Well.
now that all the lawsuits are settled.
I was going to say, you really form a bond when you go through a lawsuit together.
Right, yeah. Now that their depositions are done, what's that relationship like?
He's a pretty old school guy too.
Yeah.
You know, I like Mark, but I know a lot of players that don't.
Yeah.
And I don't know that team has, there was a real, okay, let me, so this is from someone that I talked to there in Calgary. The coaching change there was necessary because, according to this person in the organization, the entire team, if not the entire organization, had this air of negativity around it. And a large part of it was the coach, and that's true, but some of it as well fell on the veteran leadership of the team. So I think a couple of things have to happen here. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if there's not just a coach hired, but if there are trades made to address leadership issues in that team. Just because everything was so negative all season long with the Calgary Flames. And it was played out with the goaltenders, right? It was completely played out in front of everybody with the netminders.
Yeah,
but I wonder if there's more than one thing going on here, and there'll be more than one move.
That's almost a bigger issue. That's almost a bigger issue than the coach. He's just going to be a goalie for that team next year.
Frederik Andersen.
You think so?
Don't you?
I don't know. We're just going to keep on going through ducks, toss aside goalies up there.
Well, I'm sure if John Gillies, you know, didn't injure himself for pretty much the entire season, he might have been ready. Mason McDonald's at least a couple of years away. You look at who's out there and who's willing to make a deal. Oh, hi, Bob Murray.
Hmm. That's possible.
Brian Burke, farmer with the dog. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it's too obvious for it to happen, so maybe I'm off base there, but I've always been under the belief that Frederik Andersen is going to be the guy.
Jonas Hiller is obvious.
Or is it Marc-Andre Fleury?
Well, that's the shit, man. Marc-Andre Fleury must be playing game six the way we're going. That's a good pivot. We should probably touch on the games last night. That Capitals game last night was exactly what you'd expect from them in a back against the wall situation in a game five. A couple power play goals. Ovi gets the goal. He gets
great
the assist
rip
on the other one. Ooh. Oh my God! He is setting up the and then he sets up the Oshie goal with the shot, and then Holtby saves the day. I mean, like, they're up 3-1. It's easily a game the Penguins could creep back into, and Holtby shut the door in a pretty big way. That's a good win. That's a good stout, solid, outplayed them in every facet of the game win that gives you a little bit of confidence going into a game six and maybe knocks the Penguins back on their heels a little bit.
Was it enough to get Marc-Andre Fleury in there?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I think it's one more game.
The Williams goal was a bad one, but that's off a terrible turnover by Dumoulin.
Oh man, right up the gut, and he knew it right away. Like the minute that puck left his stick, he thought, "Oh my God, it's ending up in the back of the net."
Yeah. So that's not. I mean, that's a goal that Murray needs to stop, but it's not like his mistake on it. So I think you give him another shot, and then you know you make the change if things don't get off to on the right foot. And then you set up Marc-Andre Fleury playing in a game seven in Washington, which is just, again, the
juicy. Dude, you want to talk about Mike Russo having an easy job? You have an easy job. Game seven, Marc-Andre Fleury's in net in Washington against the Caps. Yeah, I feel bad for you. Whatever am I going to write about today?
But that was a loss last night for the Penguins. It just felt like, all right, like, this is as hard as it's going to be for Washington to take three straight against the Penguins, it's kind of hard to like reset your footing after getting beat the way they did in game five. That wasn't like a lucky bounce, last second goal, Capitals stave off elimination thing. That was total domination by the Capitals last night.
Mm-hmm. I think we expected it too, don't you think?
Yeah.
Like, I expected Washington, and listen, there have been large stretches of this series where Washington has totally outplayed the Pittsburgh Penguins. Mm-hmm. Now, here's where you go into coach speak. Here's what you have to do if you're Washington. You don't have to think that you need to win two games. You have to win one game twice.
Right.
That's it. Like, that's where, well, you keep talking about, you know, so much of the game is mental. That's how you have to think about it. Because going into it, you can't think about, we have to win three games. No, we have to win one game three times. That's it.
Right. Yeah.
Can they do it? And yeah. That's why I wasn't saying like, oh, yeah, they're done. They're toast. Forget about it. I was like, I'm not going to count Washington out just yet. I was quicker counting the Kings out against San Jose than I was counting Washington out after Pittsburgh.
And now you got Hornquist maybe injured. He doesn't play really in the third
Yeah,
period.
That was a weird one, eh?
Yeah, but he had a cameo appearance in a power play, which tells me it's less about his gameplay than maybe he can't go 5-on-5. You know?
Yeah.
That's a tough one. That's a big piece getting hurt in that series.
It's
if he's
huge.
Hurt. He's been really it's good
huge.
For them. I still think the Penguins are okay. I think they'll pull it out. But that
the
was
one thing that we do the one thing that we do know
by the Capitals.
The one thing we do know now for certain is the level of hatred the Caps have for Chris Letang. Like, it's seething.
Yeah.
It's venomous. How much they want to dirt this guy.
And by the way, this came out while we were doing the show.
What's up?
It's good news for the NHL. Last night's Washington-Pittsburgh NBC primetime game. Game was on NBC, like the actual network, not some cable subsidiary last night. Drew a 2.69 overnight, the best overnight for a first or second round NHL game on NBC to date. So that's going back to 2006.
Awesome.
So Sid versus Ovi still a selling point. Everybody tuned in for it. And obviously, you know, the Pittsburgh market usually brings a strong national number. So I imagine the chance to see them eliminate the Capitals yins gather around the TV, as they say in Pittsburgh.
You follow the American numbers a lot more closely than I do. Where's Buffalo? Buffalo always drives a big number. Where's Buffalo
Huge.
Through all this?
Buffalo's
Have you seen
usually
from,
popping
from
a big
who,
number.
Who Buffalo's watching?
I haven't seen it broke down yet, but I mean, like, there, no matter what, there's always a huge, huge number in Buffalo. That's why, again, like the St. Louis thing, which we'll get to in a second, so fascinating, because I think that's a city that can carry a national number if they make a cup final. But they have to get there first, and they went a long way towards that with their 4-1 win over the Dallas Stars. Once again, Dallas, can't trust them. You can't. No. Every other game this seems to happen.
So what do you do if you're Jim Neal? So what do you do here?
Well, first off, you write off this series loss because Seguin was hurt. And then you buy out a goalie and get another one.
Maybe a goaltender from New York, or maybe the goaltender that maybe you send a goaltender to New York in exchange for a Swedish one with blue eyes.
There you go. You keep on saying that. I saw a Rangers blog picked up that idea, by the way. I don't know if it's stolen from you or not, the idea that maybe it's time to trade Lundqvist.
Did they hate the idea?
I think they were like saying, what if it is the best thing for the organization right now?
Yeah. I think it's the best thing for Lundqvist and the best thing for the organization. But that's an aside. Here's the thing about Dallas for me. Lose next game, who cares? Isn't it outside of the first round house money now for the Dallas Stars? And he's getting a little bit of playing time in for these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sure, Spezza was there, Stanley Cup final in 2007 and such. But this is just like playing time and experience for these guys.
You're not going
like,
to win.
I know they had the Boffo regular season. That's it, right? Like you're delusional if you think that Dallas is yes or that blue line right now.
Yeah, or without your second best offensive player.
Like, yeah, so this is
it's not going
to
happen.
You got through the first round, great. You know, A, you got to the playoffs, that's great. B, you won a round, that's great. And C, you know, it's either going to end in 6 or 7 against the St. Louis Blues.
Yeah. Who again like, get a nice,
I don't know, man. That's
really
pretty
nice
good
goal. They get a nice goalie performance from Brian Elliott, and they get scoring from other places, which is the two things that the Blues have been unable to do for, what, 25 years?
Yeah, it's true.
They did real good. They've been so good to watch in these playoffs, to see, like, the mistakes of the past not repeated, to see Brian Elliott play well again, and now they're one win away from playing in the conference final. Just
to see Troy Brower do well. To see Brower do well. That's a nice story. It's good. It's all good.
Speaking of nice stories, you know, what's scary about the Sharks this postseason is that when they win, more so than any other team in the playoffs, when they win, they make it look easy. Like, they made it look easy against the Kings in some of those wins in round one. And the three wins in San Jose in this series have just been, like, tightly played, but all had the feeling of inevitability.
San Jose in control. How good does that Donskoy Couture Marlowe line look?
Ooh. Well, that's dude, and listen, you know, we talk about all the things that are going right for him in these playoffs and stuff, and we've definitely talked about the Pete DeBoer effect in year one. What a job of coaching he did last night. Scrambling up the lines, being real smart about it. Putting Dinas Zubris in the game for the first time since the Jurassic era. I mean, he's done some very smart things with this team and in this series. And last night, the line changes that he did after and knowing he needed to shift the paradigm a little bit after you lose that kind of overtime game in game four. That's a good piece of coaching there by Pete DeBoer.
Yeah, good piece of coaching. Another nice game from Joe Pavelski.
Another nice game from Joe
Thornton. He was great. Joe Thornton. Oh, that pass. Oh, my God, that pass.
Well, it does help the National Predators decided to. I mean, I assume that Pavelski had a restraining order against them. That's why they had to keep their distance and allow the best goal scorer on the team to just stand in front of the net alone waiting for a Joe Thornton pass.
The soft college player, the Wisconsin kid, yeah, I would ever leave him open.
What is it about that Thornton is by far the old guy you want to win a cup guy for this playoff? Like the idea that Thornton can validate himself and validate his career with a cup is important to a lot of people. Is it just age that Ovechkin's not that guy? Or is it the Russian thing? What is it about? Why aren't there more people that are like, God, I wish that we could, God, I wish that we can erase that check mark next to Ovi's name so when he goes into the Hall of Fame, it's not like, but he never did win that cup.
That's an amazing question. That really is. Is it the age thing or the birth certificate, the nationality?
Or the flashy thing. I don't know what it is. Like there was probably a time when people took joy in Joe Thornton being considered a playoff disappointment, being the face of the Sharks playoff disappointment. He's now reached the point where he's like, it's like beloved status. Players get to a certain age and they all become Teemu Selanne and Jaromir Jagr. They all become like, no matter how you felt about him at one point, they all become like the guy you root for.
Well, I mean, we saw it with Teemu in 2007 where everybody wanted Teemu to win his cup. Uh-huh. But the list of elder non-North American hockey players that everybody wanted to see win the Stanley Cup, it's pretty short, right? Yeah. There's a lot of Ray Borks and Dave Andrechuk's around. Mm-hmm. Wow, what a great question.
But you're right. It's not usually like Swedes or anybody or Russians that were like, wow, if you can only win.
Well, by the time the Swedes get to it, you know, by the time the Swedes get old, they've already won Stanley Cups because they're so good.
Kimmo Timonen was kind of the exception to the rule because he went through the health stuff, I think.
Yes, totally. Yeah. See, I think that's where I'm at with Henrik Lundqvist. I know I keep bringing everything back to Henrik Lundqvist here, but we're looking at one of the best goaltenders of this or any other generation who's going to go through his career without a Stanley Cup.
Is it different for goalies, though? Like, I feel like that goalies don't have that same sort of caveat attached to them. Right? Like, oh, he's a great goalie, but he never won a cup. Only because I feel like there's so much that has to happen for a goalie to win the cup, right?
Yeah.
That they don't, like, that, how many times do you hear a goalie, well, let me rephrase that question, actually. I don't think goalies have the no cup winning stigma, but at the same time, it seems like the ones that win cups are the ones that make the Hall of Fame.
Yet they're the only ones who have a win-loss record beside their name. Players
right.
don't.
Yo, so that's funny. Always been a plank in your platform.
Totally, always. How come it's always? I know I get it. They're on the ice for the full 60 minutes, or should be, and I understand that. But, you know, if they're not the ones if they're not the ones we have that, oh man, they're good, but they haven't won the Stanley Cup feeling about them, then why are they the only players that have their win-loss record that travels with them everywhere they go? And let's just all get on the same page here. When it comes to wins and losses in Stanley Cups, those are team stats. Those aren't individual stats. There are plenty of players that have won the Stanley Cup that I don't think are anywhere near as good a hockey player as some that haven't won the Stanley Cup. Like, no one's ever going to convince me that Travis Mullen's a better hockey player than Marcel Dion was. Ever. Although,
sure? What about Danton Cole?
One of them has a Stanley Cup last time I checked.
Danton Cole's my go-to guy with a
Danton
ring.
Danton Cole is?
Yeah. And at 95 Devils, Danton Cole.
I just saw Dallas. I had Dallas in my mind for this one, Travis Mullen. So anyway,
that's pretty good too.
That's team stat.
Yeah, no, that's it's interesting, but I think that overall, like, Thornton's the guy. Like, we're all ready for Joe to win, and it'll be great, and the Sharks too as a team, to win and break that side. And the way they're playing, man, it's hard to imagine they're not going to be playing for the cup the way they're playing right now.
I love it. It's a great story. It's amazing what happens when you get a save. I mean,
right.
They lost that L.A. series a couple of years ago because they didn't get a save from the goalie who now can't stop pucks either for the Dallas Stars.
Oh.
And they had the Stanley Cup champions against the ropes, 3-Cobb.
A couple more things before we head out. Awards-centric. I know that you always love talking about the awards.
Oh, man, do I.
Jack Adams, Barry Trotz, Lindy Ruff, Gerard Gallant. I think the issue – and not the issue – but the surprise is that they didn't find a way to get Mike Sullivan in there. Like, Sullivan is the quintessential Jack Adams candidate. Comes in during the season, has enough games behind the bench, has tangible, palpable, point-to-it results in turning a team around. What is it? Was it just three better candidates, or what was it that Sullivan didn't get across the finish line, do you think?
This is the broadcasters that vote on this, and
right.
I'm not part of the fraternity. I'm not in the club. What I am pleased with about this year's candidates is this year my broadcasting brothers and sisters didn't just decide to go with the coach that had the best scoring and save percentage for the season. Your Bob Hartleys and your Patrick Waughs just didn't go for that, like the way you're referring to perhaps with Mike Sullivan, because it's a really easy story arc to follow. Last year they were crap, and then he rolled along and changed everything. And then, you know, gets fired 13 months afterwards. So I was pretty happy about that. Still doesn't excuse the fact that Mike Babcock's never won one, but I'm sure his is on the horizon when Austin Matthews leads the Toronto Maple Leafs to the Stanley Cup. Yeah. But you're right. That is. And listen, is there anyone? And this is why I'm with you, Greg, and I'm so surprised that Mike Sullivan, you know, didn't get any more consideration. And this is where I say to myself, on Mike Sullivan, man, I need to fire my agent. I mean, he should have been out there with the PR campaign behind the scenes on this one. Is there a group of people in this game that love stories like this more than the broadcasters? This is what we dine out on. This is what makes our jobs easy. We talk about what Patrick Roy did with Colorado. You know, we talk with what Bob Hartley did with the Calgary Flames. So I am with you. I'm a little bit shocked that Mike Sullivan's not there.
Yeah, but you know what I also think, though? Like, the nominees are Barry Trotz, one of the most likable guys on the planet. Gerard Gallant, guy who's kicked around, former player, loved the way he used to play the game. Florida Panthers, good story. And then Lindy Ruff, who, you know, all the broadcasters probably love, too. I feel like Mike Sullivan's kind of a gruff guy. And I also think he's not, like, a guy the broadcasters know yet. You know what I mean? It's a likability factor.
Has been an assistant for a long time.
Yeah,
I don't
that's
know
true.
About that.
Yeah, with the single least likable guy in hockey.
Well, if you're going to go for the quote from someone, you're going to go for the head coach. You're not going to go to Mike Sullivan. That is a good point, too.
Right.
Kind of steals your headlines and steals your thunder.
And it's surprising. But then again, like I wanted to make the case for him, but at the same time, it's like, who do you take out? Like, if you're going to say Barry Trotz is the beneficiary of amazing goaltending performance from Braden Holtby, I mean, that's fine, but how do you not give for all the complaining that we do about the guys who coach the best teams getting overlooked for this award, how do you take him out of the mix? He deserves it.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah, he does.
Lindy
maybe take Gallant out. Maybe take Gerard Gallant out.
Maybe that's
take away
one,
that
point.
Take away that Boffo winning streak, right?
Tough to not give it to
for
a guy
winning streak.
Who coaxes the best season out of a moribund franchise. I don't know. It's a tough one.
And then the other one, obviously, who drove the coaching staff crazy. But,
right.
Go ahead.
Then the other one, of course, is the heart. You get your Patrick Kane. You get your Jamie Benn.
Yeah.
And you get your Sidney Crosby.
Well, that's you can't give it to Crosby because solid. No, you can't give it to Crosby because he didn't play enough games. The other two guys played 82, and he only played 80.
Well,
Greg.
You can make the argument, but you can also make the argument that his season didn't start until his coach got fired, too. Right?
Well, and there's a nice little story arc there too, because when the coaching change was made, wasn't he in like 91st place overall in points?
Yeah, it was something crazy.
91. It was insane. Like, he was trying to like a 12 goal season.
I will tell you that one of these three members did not make my top three. Can you guess which one it was?
I'm going to guess Jamie Benn.
Nope, it was Sidney Crosby.
And you had Joe Thornton in there instead?
I had Joe Thornton in my top three, yeah. Trying not to tell you the exact order of things because we're not.
No, I know. You're not allowed to do that. Nope, I know. That's bad form.
I had my top five in alphabetical order was Jamie Benn, Sidney Crosby, Patrick Kane, Roberto Luongo, and Joe Thornton.
Kane wins this one going away, right?
Yeah, I think so. But Ben Ben might have gotten a nice late push, though. I mean, because Kane's points per game dropped as the season went on. Ben picked up the slack for Sagan being out. So he probably garnered a lot of support late. But
again, we've talked about this before. That one speaks to the value of the point, right? Mm-hmm. Do you give equal weight to a point earned in November as a point earned in March or April?
Yeah. It will be interesting.
Or do you say a point's a point?
It will be interesting, though, to see, you know, the same voters who are voting on the Hart vote on the Calder. So could you have two guys in the same line sweep both awards? That's just interesting to rationalize it based on that debate we had last week about, you know, did Kane make Panarin? Did Panarin make Kane? And then, like, they both win. It'd be kind of interesting.
And Panarin should carve off some of his Calder bonus for Patrick Kane.
There you go, because Kane needs the money. Real briefly before we go, I saw Civil War yesterday afternoon, the new Captain America film.
Tell me what Civil War is.
kids. So it's a movie in which
okay.
the government wants to
speak to me like I am a child.
So you know the Avengers, right?
Yes.
Okay. The UN wants to control them after there was so much collateral damage in all of their missions to save the world. The UN wants to be the ones to deploy the Avengers. And Iron Man, you familiar with Iron Man?
Tony Stark, yes. The drunk.
Yes. Iron Man is on the side of signing these accords because he thinks there needs to be some oversight. And then Captain America, who's become disillusioned with the government, with that kind of control, does not want the Avengers to be controlled by the United Nations. So that's the crux of the Civil War happening. These two ideologies warring against each other.
Okay, and this is the one, because I saw a trailer for this when I saw the last Star Wars movie. This is the one where Iron Man and Captain America fight, right?
They fight, yes.
I heard the clips that I saw, like a pretty cool fight scene, too.
It's a really, really solid flick. I would give it an A-. I'd rank it maybe like number 4 amongst the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. I will say this, though. When you set up your film where two heroes are fighting, and you've set up your film to give them both a legitimate reason why they're right, it kind of does sap the film of stakes and of the root who you root for dynamic. Like, you're kind of rooting for them not to fight, which is not like – it's like it's at 2.5 hours when the overall – the biggest emotion you feel is, come on, guys, just, like, have a beer. Work it out. Like, it's kind of – it doesn't really hit the same dramatic highs and lows of a typical hero-villain dynamic. It was a very thoughtful film and had some great action beats, but I just felt – I didn't feel like my pot didn't boil. It simmered, but it didn't boil with this one.
All right. Now, what are you doing tonight with no NHL to watch? Here's my question. Because in a couple hours, we're going to all sit down and watch NHL hockey. What are you going to watch tonight? Are you even going to watch anything tonight, Greg?
Oh, yeah. Well, luckily, HBO's amazing comedies, Veep and Silicon Valley, are back. So I'll watch those live rather than on tape. And, you know, maybe I'll get into Game of Thrones at some point. I don't know. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Well, I mean, this is a stupid question. I think everybody else will obviously get on with life and do things that aren't hockey. You will likely be watching black and white footage on your laptop.
No, that does sound delightful. But no, I think I'm going to start. Finally, I'm going to start watching, because it's been sitting there taunting me on my desk for about a year now. I'm going to finally start watching Cosmos, the Neil deGrasse Tyson show.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's so good.
I know. I'm dying to watch it.
Yeah.
They're going to start that tonight. And then in a couple of years, I'll start Game of Thrones. In a couple of years, probably.
See, when you know, the next lockout, let's you and I
Turn
the podcast
into
a Game of Thrones binge watch. Let's do an episode
I'm down
a day.
With that. Okay.
I'll just live at your place for a while.
Sure, why not?
We'll just get some stinkweed and drink mead and then watch Game of Thrones.
I'm down with that.
All right.
We Eric have the room. We'll have the time.
Versus
next lockout.
Lannisters. Exactly. All right. Thanks
all right,
to Mike
and listen. Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thanks to Mike Russo. I was going to say happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. We could not do anything in this world without you, so we thank you, all of them. I was lucky to have two, one by birth, one by adoption. One is no longer with me, and I still miss her every day that I live, and the other I have a lovely relationship with. So happy Mother's Day to both of them.
Yes.
And my wife, who's the mother of
two
beautiful boys. My wife and my wife.
And happy birthday, happy Mother's Day to my mom, who's literally never listened to anything I've ever done, so this will be lost on her.
That's okay, Bob will tell her.
That's right.
Hey, your kid, remember him? Yeah, he said happy Mother's Day.
Yeah, no, that's exciting. Like, as soon as he figures out that AOL dial-up down in the basement. and gets the podcast again. All right, everybody. Talk to you soon, and enjoy afternoon hockey.
Yeah.
And then a night away from it. Bye.